What's Universal Time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Dave DeForest reporting Americans Vote.
Thank you all so much. What a super Tuesday.
A big night for Democrat Hillary Clinton and also a big night for Republican Donald Trump, both racking up a series of wins in key states on Super Tuesday, the primary election's most important day of voting. According to media projections, former Secretary of State Clinton dealt a blow to her rival Bernie Sanders in six southern states: Tennessee, Alabama, Georgia, Arkansas, Virginia, and Texas. The only states Sanders is projected to have won are Vermont, his home state, and Oklahoma. On the Republican side, Trump took Georgia, Alabama, Tennessee, Virginia, and Massachusetts. According to projections, Trump's only losses Tuesday were to Senator Ted Cruz, who took his home state of Texas and Oklahoma. The United Nations Refugee Agency is warning Europe its refugee crisis is worsening as tens of thousands of people have become stranded in Greece. Henry Ridgewell reports.
Hundreds of migrants continue to arrive by the hour at the Greece-Macedonia border. Aid agencies estimate more than 8,000 people are camped at the frontier. Greek authorities are building bigger camps away from the border, but the migrants are determined to press on toward Western Europe, and the pressure is building. Henry Ridgewell, London.
A suspected Islamic radical appeared before the International Criminal Court Tuesday to answer charges that he helped destroy historic religious shrines in the Malian city of Timbuktu. Ahmad Al-Faqi Al-Mahdi spoke only briefly during the pretrial hearing in The Hague. He's accused of organizing the destruction of 14 mausoleums and a mosque. This is VOA News. Iraqi officials say Islamic State militants attacked an Iraqi military headquarters overnight, killing eight soldiers. The four militants, dressed as soldiers, attacked the compound near the town of Haditha in Anbar province. Syrian President Bashar al-Assad says the cessation of hostilities in his country offers a glimmer of hope. In a German television interview, he said his government will do its part to make the truce work. Osama bin Laden predicted the demise of the Islamic State group, warning before his death that any effort by jihadists to declare a caliphate before defeating the West would be doomed to fail. The insight is one of several emerging from 113 newly declassified documents, part of a trove found by U.S. Navy SEALs during the 2011 raid on bin Laden's compound in Pakistan, in which the al-Qaeda leader was killed. The U.S. Justice Department and technology company Apple sparred Tuesday over the government's demand that Apple unlock an iPhone used by one of the shooters in last year's California terrorist attack. FBI Director James Comey told a congressional hearing that technological advancements to keep phone information secret can also block investigators from collecting key evidence in criminal and terrorism cases.
All care about the same things, in my view. The companies care about public safety. The FBI cares about innovation and privacy. We devote our lives to trying to stop people from stealing our innovation, our secrets, and hacking into our devices. We care about the same things, which should make this, in a way, an easier conversation.
Apple's chief lawyer, though, Bruce Sewell, said the government's demand that it unlock a phone used by Syed Rizwan Farouk would, quoting now, set a dangerous precedent for government intrusion into the lives of people. The former heir apparent to Zimbabwe's long-ruling president, Robert Mugabe, has launched a new political party to challenge Mr. Mugabe's nearly four-decade hold on power. Joyce Mujuru announced the formation of the Zimbabwe People First Party Tuesday at a news conference in the capital, Harare. The Lord Mayor of Uganda's capital, Kampala, says his re-election sends a strong message to President Yoweri Museveni that the will of the people is supreme. Erias Lukwago warned that the president and his ruling National Resistance Movement should stop frustrating residents of the city who want their needs met. North Korea says it will boycott the UN Human Rights Council and never ever be bound by UN resolutions critical of its rights record. Foreign Minister Ri Su-yong told the council Tuesday in Geneva any resolutions against North Korea will only be what he calls proof of partiality and double standards. From the VOA News Center in Washington, I'm Dave DeForest.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today's Wednesday, March 2nd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. East African community leaders meet today in Arusha, Tanzania, but will President Nkurunziza of Burundi be there?
I believe that President Nkurunziza will be well represented at the summit, but I can confirm that it is rather the second vice president of the Republic of Burundi who will be sitting for him.
Ali Nyamitwe is Burundi's foreign minister. The Lord Mayor of Kampala City says President Museveni must respect the people's wishes. Former Zimbabwe Vice President Joyce Mujuru breaks her silence since her expulsion from the ruling party. And the United Nations seeks a durable solution to the displacement crisis in eastern Congo.
We have now started the conversation with the government of Congo to discuss the issue of durable solutions to the issue of displacement as a way of ensuring, where feasible, the dignified and safe return of displaced people.
Mamadou Diallo is the UN Humanitarian Coordinator in the DRC. A UN Security Council delegation visits Mali tomorrow, Thursday, and the ICC considers a possible war crimes trial for the destruction of Mali's religious or cultural heritage. Those stories plus Marco Oman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. East African community leaders are meeting today, Wednesday, in Arusha, Tanzania. The community, comprising Burundi, Kenya, Rwanda, Tanzania, and Uganda, has been involved in mediating Burundi's peace talks under the leadership of Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni. But those talks have so far failed to yield practical results. The East African leaders are likely to get a report from President Museveni on how his mediation efforts have been going. But the key question about Wednesday's Arusha summit is whether Burundian President Pierre Nkurunziza will attend. Foreign Minister Ali Nyamitwe would only say that Burundi will be highly represented by the country's second vice president.
I believe that President Nkurunziza will be well represented at the summit, but I can confirm that it is rather the second vice president of the Republic of Burundi who will be sitting for him.
Are you saying, Mr. Minister, that President Pierre Nkurunziza is not going to be attending the summit?
I'm saying that Burundi will be attending the summit, and that is true.
So will it be the president or not the president?
No, I told you that the president will be well represented.
What can you tell us, Minister? A lot of things happened prior to this summit. We had the African Union delegation visiting your country. We had even the Secretary General of the United Nations going to your country. What do you think the people of Burundi should expect out of this summit?
Well, first of all, this summit is not an extraordinary summit dedicated to Burundi. This is an ordinary summit of the East African community, which has matters to deal with, as in the normal order of things. Now, the summit could maybe receive a report of President Museveni on how the facilitation role has been done so far. But I think there's no particular issue on the agenda. The agenda has already been done, and I didn't see anything, you know, related to Burundi. Now, it could be raised under AOB, or it could be raised by one head of state or another, but I don't think that Burundi will dominate the agenda.
But you know full well, Mr. Minister, that with the crisis in your country, it will likely dominate or come up during the summit.
No, why should it dominate the summit? This is an ordinary summit, I just told you. And the ordinary summit has issues, has matters that are already on the agenda, that are being will be dealt with in the agenda. And as it has not been raised during the ministerial meeting, I'll be surprised that Burundi is raised during the summit. But if that will be the case, still, Burundi will be there to take the floor and also listen to what the other partner states will have to say and draw the lessons.
The dialogue in your country, is your government open to welcome all Burundians, whether they are in the country or outside the country?
Well, that is an agreed upon issue. I don't think it is any more debatable.
The African Union has agreed to send 100 human rights monitors. Are these people welcome as opposed to African Union forces?
Yeah, they're most welcome. We are working out the modalities for them to be deployed to Burundi. We are open. We are ready for them.
Before I let you go, Mr. Minister, let me get it confirmed again. Are you saying that President Pierre Nkurunziza is not in Arusha? He would not be at the meeting?
James, I have told you and I repeat, Burundi will be well represented at the highest level. Call me again tomorrow. I will tell you who is here.
Ali Nyamito is Burundi's foreign minister. He was speaking with me from Tanzania's capital, Dar es Salaam. The United Nations says efforts are underway to bring to an end the long-standing displacement crisis in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo by seeking durable solutions for millions of displaced people. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The Democratic Republic of Congo remains the longest and most protracted humanitarian crisis on the African continent, with ongoing conflict in North and South Kivu, Ituri Province, and North Katanga. Instability in neighboring countries has forced thousands of people to seek refuge in DRC. The UN Refugee Agency reports there were more than 2.5 million internally displaced people and more than 100,000 refugees in DRC at the end of last year. Mamadou Diallo, the UN humanitarian coordinator in DRC, says it is beyond time to bring this crisis to an end.
We have now started the conversation with the government of Congo to discuss the issue of durable solutions to the issue of displacement as a way of ensuring, where feasible, the dignified and safe return of displaced people into their areas of origin, or else looking for other durable solutions through settlement or resettlement of some of these displaced people into the host communities as a way of ending this long-term displacement.
The United Nations has launched a $690 million appeal to assist 7 million people in DRC, of whom more than half are going hungry. Priorities include health care, water and sanitation, aid for millions of victims of rape and sexual violence, and assistance for the displaced. Diallo, however, says the country, in particular Eastern Congo, has huge economic potential with peace. He tells VOA, North and South Kivu, the breadbasket of the Congo, have the potential to feed the entire nation and export crops to neighboring countries.
But because of the insecurity, people in the displacement, some of the people no longer have the possibility of going to their fields, attending to their crops and doing other things. So they remain in the camps and rely on handouts.
Diallo says the situation can be reversed with political will from the government and the necessary resources to help the millions of displaced people leave their lives of dependency and resume a normal life. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The Lord Mayor of Uganda's capital, Kampala, says his re-election sends a strong message to President Yoweri Museveni that the will of the people is supreme, and he warned that the president and his ruling National Resistance Movement should stop frustrating residents of the city who want their needs and aspirations met. Irias Lukwago tells reporter Peter Clotty that he will not compromise on accountability and corruption during his second term.
It has not been that easy for me to renew my mandate, and I thank the people of Kampala for entrusting me with a new mandate to run the affairs of Kampala. Unfortunately, the presidential elections did not go well in accordance with the law, with the constitution. They were really messed up by the Electoral Commission. We feel like we didn't have a free and fair election. It was just a mockery of democracy. And the mood right now in the country is somber. People are being repressed, people are being suppressed. The military, the police, and all these other security agencies are roaming the streets. And of course, you are aware the main opposition candidate, Colonel Dr. Kizza Besigye, is being kept under house arrest. And when he attempts to get out of his home, he's persecuted, he's arrested.
Supporters of the NRM are saying it is peaceful. However, you are saying that it's tensed. They accuse you and Kizza Besigye of causing this tension because General Kele Karuhura, the IGP, Inspector General of Police, said that Besigye deserves what he is getting currently for fomenting trouble.
That's a very, very unfortunate statement come from the IGP, the Inspector General of Police, because he knows it for sure that Dr. Kizza Besigye and I, and any other political actor in the opposition, we're not at all responsible for situation obtaining in the country right now. There's nothing that they can point at and say this is exactly what Dr. Kizza Besigye is trying to do, or fomenting or inciting violence, as it were, because right now they have not in any way attempted to charge Dr. Kizza Besigye or any other opposition leader with any offense related to incitement to violence or causing chaos, disrupting the peace and security in the country. Nothing of the sort, or any other crime whatsoever.
What does your re-election mean to the people of Kampala?
In the first place, it sends a powerful message to President Yoweri Museveni and his cohorts that the will of the people is supreme, and that the reason he went to the bush was purposely to restore people's sovereign authority, to restore democracy, and so on and so forth. But for the last 5 years, he had refused to recognize that the people of Kampala chose Lukwago as their Lord Mayor, and he had made it difficult for me to seize the instruments of power so that I can deliver on the manifesto and the promises I made to the people of Kampala.
Erias Lukwago is the re-elected Lord Mayor of Kampala. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from Uganda's capital. Today is Wednesday, March 2nd, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 16 minutes past the hour. A UN Security Council delegation will visit Mali tomorrow, Thursday, to assess the security situation in the country. Corinne Dufka, Human Rights Watch's West Africa Associate Director, tells Ricky Strayak that attacks from Islamic groups have spread south in Mali and are still an issue. She says the UN should use the visit to explore ways to enhance civilian protection in light of what she calls rampant banditry by armed groups in the north of the country.
Yeah, so we were very concerned about instances of mistreatment and torture by the Malian security forces, notably the army, in response to the movement south of the armed jihadist groups. We documented numerous cases of very serious torture and mistreatment, mock executions, beating, several cases of detainees being burned. I've been documenting the response of the security forces to these abuses, to armed groups in the north and throughout Mali since 2012. And I can say that in some ways their behavior has somewhat improved. In 2012-2013, it appeared that nearly all detainees had suffered some sort of mistreatment, but this time it was about half. That said, the abuses continue and are very worrying indeed.
In this report, you said the attacks by the Islamist armed groups and the forces themselves have moved south in Mali. Can you say how far south they have moved, and what does this movement mean to the stability of Mali?
Yeah, I think most Malians would say that they were quite disappointed last year, which should have been a consolidation year for peace and security. But instead, from January of last year, we started seeing attacks by armed jihadist groups in the central and southern regions of Mali. And I think it was very worrying and disappointing to Malians. We noted that these attacks started in central Mali around Nampala and in the Segu region around Nampala and a couple of cities around there, Panenko and so forth, and then moved south towards the Burkina Faso border. We documented about 20 executions by these armed jihadists, primarily of people in the government, mayors, prefects, which appeared to be designed to empty the region of representatives of the government. I should say that the attacks seemed to move from central Mali into southern Mali as the year progressed.
The report also talks about abuses by the military, especially targeting certain groups such as PUL and the Dogon. Is there any sense that this targeting of certain groups by the military will radicalize these groups and push them toward joining the Islamist fighters?
The armed Islamic movements appear to be taking advantage and indeed using as a recruitment strategy a few things. One of them was abuse and mistreatment by the Malian army. The other one were longer standing community tension between, for example, the Tuareg and PUL.
That was Corinne Dufka, West Africa Associate Director for Human Rights Watch. She was speaking to Ricky Strayak from Washington. Judges at the International Criminal Court in The Hague began considering arguments yesterday, Tuesday, on whether to open the court's first ever war crimes trial targeting the destruction of religious or cultural heritage. Malian citizen Ahmed Al-Faqi Al-Mahdi is accused of overseeing the 2012 attacks on cherished religious sites in Mali's ancient city of Timbuktu. Lisa Schlein has more for VOA from Paris.
Thank you, Madam President. Ahmed Al-Faqi Al-Mahdi, born in Agoun, Mali,
The hearing was unprecedented for a court better known for judging crimes such as rape, killing, and sexual slavery. On Tuesday, judges at the International Criminal Court instead considered whether there was enough evidence to bring to trial another kind of crime, the destruction of cultural and religious heritage. Former trainee teacher and alleged jihadist Ahmed Al-Faqi Al-Mahdi is accused of planning and leading the destruction of nine mausoleums and the door of an ancient mosque in the northern Malian city of Timbuktu in June and July of 2012. All but one of the buildings were designated United Nations World Heritage Sites. Timbuktu is known as the city of 333 saints and has been an important trading and religious hub for centuries. In opening remarks before a pre-trial chamber, ICC prosecutor Fatou Bensouda argued the mausoleum's demolition by Islamist radicals amounts to nothing less than the destruction of the soul and history of a community and a loss for the world.
What is at stake here is not just walls and stones. The destroyed mausoleums were important from a religious point of view, from an historical point of view, and from an identity point of view. Such an attack against buildings dedicated to religion and historic monuments falls into the category of crimes that destroy the roots of an entire people and profoundly and irremediably affect its social practices and structures.
The prosecution claims Al-Mahdi, an ethnic Tuareg who is believed to be in his 30s, led a morality squad in Timbuktu and was a member of militant group Ansar Dine, an ally of Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb. Al-Mahdi appeared to listen carefully to the prosecution's arguments. He sported long hair, a beard, and spectacles. He spoke briefly, saying he understood the charges against him. He has previously denied them, and his lawyers will make his case during the hearing. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
Former Zimbabwe Vice President Joyce Mujuru yesterday appeared in public for the first time since her expulsion from the ruling ZANU-PF party last year. She told a news conference that she was ready to deliver a political change in Zimbabwe. Thomas Chiripazi of VOA Zimbabwe program reports from Harare.
Addressing a news conference in Harare, Mrs. Mujuru, who is leading the newly formed Zimbabwe People First Party on an interim basis, said she was ready to get Zimbabwe out of its social, economic and political problems. The former vice president said a coalition to unseat President Robert Mugabe's government was necessary. However, she noted that negotiations with other political parties were yet to start.
We will cross the bridge when we get there. I don't believe in doing things when we are not yet there. We have a lot of things that we are working on right now. And I don't have anything that somebody would have done bad to me.
Mrs. Mujuru's remarks confirmed earlier assertions by former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai of the Movement for Democratic Change Party, who told reporters last month that the coalition talks were yet to begin. She also called for key democratic reforms to be implemented ahead of the 2018 polls to ensure that the elections do not breed a predetermined outcome. She, however, fell short of saying the 2013 polls were rigged by President Mugabe and his ZANU-PF party, adding that policies that scare away investors, such as the Black Economic Empowerment Law, should be reviewed.
The people of Zimbabwe voted for a new democratic constitution in 2013, but it is still to be fully implemented. In line with the new constitution, we need the electoral laws reformed to ensure a free and level playing field. Is the government of the day looking at this? The suffering masses, through their political representations, need to make this point loud and clear, so that the next election is not in any way disputed or considered flawed or rigged.
The former vice president said she would work flat out to ensure that Zimbabwe rejoins the Commonwealth.
Zimbabwe People First is committed to ensuring that Zimbabwe regains its rightful place in the global community of nations. We shall rejoin the Commonwealth.
Zimbabwe pulled out of the Commonwealth in 2002 after it was accused of election rigging and rights violations. Mrs. Mujuru further said a steering committee has been set up to spearhead People First inaugural elective congress that would be held on a date yet to be advised. This is Thomas Chiripasi.
It's 25 minutes past the hour. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. A very good Wednesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with squash. Egypt's Mohamed El Shobagi is the world's top-ranked male squash player. The Professional Squash Association disclosed at their headquarters in the British city of Leeds on Tuesday. According to the rankings for the month of March, Egyptians Omar Mossad, Rami Ashour, Tariq Momen, and Karim Abdel Gawad rank 4th, 5th, 6th, and 7th respectively, while Marwan El Shobagi is placed 11th. In the women's world rankings, Egypt's Ranim El Welili is ranked 3rd. Nur El Sherbin, Omni Abdel Kawi, Nuran Gohar, and Nur El Tayeb are ranked 5th, 6th, 8th, and 9th, respectively. In Olympic news, a new court of arbitration for sports CAS anti-doping division will be in charge of handling cases of alleged anti-doping violations at the 2016 Rio de Janeiro Olympics, the International Olympic Committee president Thomas Bach disclosed in Lausanne, Switzerland on Tuesday. The CAS anti-doping division will replace the IOC disciplinary commission to hear and adjudicate on doping cases arising at the Olympics. The change is part of the Olympic Agenda 2020 reform. It's a major step towards making the management of anti-doping testing independent of sports federations. Bach emphasized the IOC's zero-tolerance policy in fighting against doping, but also to protect clean athletes from unfair victimization. The Court of Arbitration for Sports is the world's highest authority in settling sports disputes. Its findings are binding on all parties. In disability sports, Egypt's legendary female powerlifter Fatma Omar won the gold medal in the under 16 kilogram division at the recent World Powerlifting Cup in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. What's more, she clinched a victory with a new world record of 135.5 kilograms. The 43-year-old Omar was a gold medalist at the Paralympics in 2000 in Sydney, Australia, 2004 in Athens, Greece, 2008 in Beijing, China, and 2012 in London in the United Kingdom. Omar has qualified for the Paralympics in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil in September. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Here's our listener mail for this to Wednesday morning, the second day of March.
I wish to congratulate all the winners of Black History Month prizes. Special greetings to friends in Nigeria, our country. This is the Lord Dwayne. Once again, congratulations to all the winners of the Black History Month prizes. Comrade Mars Patrick Okorograph. Oh, Blue Promise, Atani, how to win at your state, Nigeria.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. That is it for this Wednesday, March 2nd edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Marco Oman, along with our engineer Charles Hall, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very good day.
Music time in Africa. Savor the flavor of African music. Hi, I'm Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Tune in, feast your ears, and dig in to an hour of amazing Pan-African music, featured interviews, and music news. Music Time in Africa, Friday at 0900 and Saturday and Sunday at 0900, 15, 20, and 2200 hours UTC.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa. We'll discuss the beauty of Africa with me, Esther Gidoy-Ewart, as guest host. Tune in to Straight Talk Africa next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.